The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
So, hello, everybody. My name is Gesho, and I'm a senior student here at the Village Zendo. And I'm really delighted to see everybody here who's in this physical space and in this online space. There are people I know well, but some of them I don't get to see very often, and also new people. So, and a special welcome to people who are new to the Sangha or newer, and it's a pleasure getting to know you. So I'm going to talk today about Zen poetry and the 12th century female Zen teacher, Miaozong. So that's where we're going to be headed. As some of you may know, I'm co-teaching this year our path class. So the Zendo has a tradition of these study classes that meet monthly, either over a season or over the whole year, to intimately investigate some aspect of usually our teaching literature. So there have been paths of the Bodhisattva, path of the koan, path of the ox herder for the 10 ox herding pictures. And this year, Fusho Hoshi and I are teaching the path of expression. So its focus is on our immediate expression. And in the spring, over four sessions, I've been leading Zen poetry. And in the fall, Fusho Hoshi will be leading the art of flower arranging for the home and for the altar, influenced by her studies in Ikebana. So I'm really looking forward to that. But we've been doing Zen poetry, and the class, because there are four sessions, it seemed to naturally fall into the movement of Zen from place to place and time to time. So we began in India with some poems by the direct followers of Shakyamuni Buddha. Men and women, we have their poetry collections, which is quite amazing to have. And even though that's before Zen, right away we see that people are expressing their understanding of the Dharma in the form of poems. And this continues right up until very literally the present moment. I'd always had Zen poems on my shelf, and I'd loved them way before I was a Zen practitioner, but I had never really fully delved into the great richness until I was preparing for this class. And I was left with a sense of the vastness of the literature, but also its importance to Zen. And that it's not some kind of secondary thing or ornament or extra, that it's actually very fundamental. So you'll notice if you come to more of these Dharma talks that many times speakers include poems in their talks. And Roshi Enkyo, for instance, pretty much always, I think, ends her talks with a four-line gatha that acts as a kind of punctuation for the talk. It points out some particular aspect of what she's been talking about. And you'll see poems everywhere in the Zen literature. One place that you see them is in the koan collections. So if you've ever been doing formal study of the koans, or you've gone to a path of the koan class, or maybe you've just been curious about them and you've picked up a volume of koans to investigate what they're like, you know, they're short teaching stories, and they usually have some paragraphs of commentary or explanation, but they also always include poems. Certainly all the koan collections that we work with include poems as a central part of explicating or understanding or pointing to what's possible in the koan. And in our class, we've been working with this particular koan collection called Zen Echoes, which I'll talk about in a moment. If you were at the recent Shuso Hosen for Yakuin, or if you've ever been to one, One of the things that happens is that the Shuso gives a talk on a particular koan. Hers was a koan called Master Ma is Unwell. And the koan goes, Master Ma was unwell, and we think that maybe he was just a few days from dying. Master Ma was unwell. The head monk approached him and said, how is your venerable health these days? And Master Ma answered, sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha. And in the tradition, the sun-faced Buddha lives for 1,800 years, and the moon-faced Buddha only lives for a day. And that was his whole answer. And as part of the ceremony, after the talk, the Shuso walks very slowly over here to where Roshi was sitting. And during that time, the Benji, the person who's going to be the next Shuso, sings the koan, sings the verse for the koan. I think I know, but maybe not. And it went something like this. Sun-faced Buddha, moon-faced Buddha, stars fall, thunder rolls, the mirror faces forms without subjectivity, the pearl in a bowl rolls of itself. Don't you see, before the hammer, gold refined 100 times. Under the scissors, silk from one loom. So that moment is like one of my very favorite moments in all of our ceremonies that we do. And you can just feel the whole room filled with the feeling of the poem, even if you don't fully know what it's referring to. And I feel like I'm increasingly influenced by that sense of singing as part of the poems and part of the koans. So in our path class, we were in China last time, and we worked a little bit with this book, Zen Echoes, and on poems for koans. What's remarkable about this book, it's a collection of koans that are basically familiar koans, perfectly famous, well-known koans, but the Zen teacher Miao Zong lived in the 12th century and was known as the first officially recognized female Zen master. She wrote poems for 43 koans. And although most of her writing was lost, those poems survived. And then 500 years later, in the 17th century, two Dharma friends, Bao Qi and Zhu Kui, decided, maybe just like in a way as a Zen game, to add their own poems to this collection. So what this collection is a translation by the translator Beata Grant of this full collection. So you get the koans, and then you get Miao Zong's poem, and then you get Bao Qi's and Zui Qi's. So Zui Qi's. Zui Qi's. Zui Qi's poems. So it's really a remarkable document that we have, one of the few, you know, real records of women in the tradition. And I'd love to talk to you about all of them, but the one I wanted to give you a little bit more about today is Miao Zong, because there are some amazing stories about her. So the stories I want to share come from another very wonderful collection called The Hidden Lamp, which is a contemporary collection of koans and teaching stories about women in the Zen tradition. And each one is accompanied by a couple of pages of commentary by a contemporary Zen teacher, and those include Enkyo Roshi and Joshin Roshi. Both are in the book. So it's a really wonderful book. And it has two stories about Miao Zong, which I'm just going to share with you. So the first one, Miao Zong was born in a wealthy family. And we know, for instance, her grandfather was a literati scholar official who was an inventor, a poet, a polymath. And we can conjecture that she was well-educated in the Chinese literary tradition. And basically, at that time, to be literate in China also meant to be taught to compose poems. To be in any kind of government role, you had to take what was basically a very complex civil service examination. And part of that examination was the requirement that you spontaneously compose some poems, and they were judged. You could get a better or worse post job if depending on how your poems were. So we know that she was educated in writing poems. She married, and then sometime after her marriage, she became interested in Zen and began to visit various Zen teachers. And there's stories of her encounters with some of them. One of them is Jian Yuan, and this is presented in The Hidden Lamp as Miao Zong's disappointment. So Master Jian Yuan said, "As a well-brought-up lady from a wealthy family, how can you be prepared for the business of a great hero?" And in the Chinese, that has a definitely masculine inflection. This is kind of how they talked about Chan masters as being somehow especially manly. So I think we can read that as, how can you be prepared for the business of being a male great hero? Miao Zong replied, "Does the Buddha Dharma distinguish between male and female?" Yuan questioned her further. He said, "What is the Buddha? This mind is the Buddha. What about you?" Miao Zong replied, "I've heard of you for a long time. I'm disappointed to find that you still say that kind of thing." So she was fierce. And then there's another story about her that I think is even better. This is about her time as Dahui's student. So she eventually she found Dahui as her sort of heart teacher and became one of two of his female successors. So he was unusual in that time of really taking in his female students, and he often held her up as an example to his other female students to encourage them to really follow the way of Chan fiercely. There's this story. This is called, I think, Miao Zong's interview, Dharma interview. So before Miao Zong became a nun, she used to visit Master Dahui Zonggo's monastery to study with him. And he gave her a room in the abbot's quarters. The senior monk, Wanan, did not approve. Dahui said to him, "Although she is a woman, she has outstanding merits." Wanan still disapproved. So Dahui urged him to have an interview with Miao Zong. Wanan reluctantly agreed and requested an interview. Miao Zong said, "Do you want a Dharma interview or a worldly interview?" "A Dharma interview," replied Wanan. Miao Zong said, "Then send your attendants away." She went into the room first, and after a few moments, she called, "Please come in." When Wanan entered, he saw Miao Zong lying naked on her back on the bed. He pointed to her genitals and said, "What is this place?" I think he would know, but "What is this place?" Miao Zong replied, "All the Buddhas of the three worlds, the six patriarchs, and all the great monks everywhere come out of this place." Wanan said, "And may I enter?" Miao Zong replied, "Horses may cross, asses may not." Wanan was unable to reply. Miao Zong declared, "I have met you, senior monk. The interview is over." She turned her back on him. Wanan left, ashamed. Later, Dahui said to him, "That old dragon has some wisdom, doesn't she?" So I think this can give you a little bit of a flavor of what it was like to be a woman among a largely male Chan world, and but also of the flavor of her fierceness, her playfulness, her directness, and her understanding of Chan. All of it's right there in those stories. So one of the great things about Zen Echoes is it offers not only Miaozong's understanding of each of these koans, it offers you three different ones. And it's a reminder that there is not a single response to a koan. It's a constellation that arises between you and the koan and your circumstances, and it comes alive in your own life. And so it came alive in one way for Miaozong, in one way for Bao Qi, and in one way for Zhu Kui. And Bao Qi and Zhu Kui in their time were also very well respected. They were good friends, and they both became abbesses, and their writings were collected and preserved and can be found. I think perhaps you need to read classical Chinese at this point, but they can be found. So they were also they're less famous, but also important. And I wanted to read you just three poems. They're three poems for one particular koan. I was struck in this one that they had very different understandings of it. And I think it's just helpful to feel that your own understanding of a koan has to come from your own life. So this is Nan Kuan Kills a Cat. It's really one of the most famous of koans about the great Chan teacher Nan Kuan. So at Nan Kuan's monastery, the east and west halls were fighting over a cat. Nan Kuan picked it up and said to the assembly, "Say a word and you can save the cat. If you do not say the word, then I will slice it in two." The assembly had no reply, and Nan Kuan then sliced the cat in two. Zhao Zhou returned from outside the temple, and Nan Kuan told him what he had said. Zhao Zhou then took off his grass sandals, placed them on his head, and went out. Nan Kuan said, "If only you had been here just now, you would have been able to save the cat." And this part of what's so difficult about this koan, now, and I think really throughout the history of working with these koans, is the violence that it suggests. You know, we have a precept against not killing. We have a precept against not harming. How could he have really killed the cat? We don't want the cat to die. And that's part of its power, and that's part of what's confusing about working with it. So here's what Miaozong said. Nan Kuan brandished his sword and sliced the cat in two. Giving and taking life is something only masters understand. The authority seems in this morning to be in his hands. Watch carefully for when the order is carried out. So 500 years later, Bao Qi offers her poem. Zhao Zhou was secretly pleased to have claimed the advantage. He was sure Nan Kuan had missed out on the first challenge. But though he escaped with the straw sandals on his head, Nan Kuan understood that there had never been a live cat. And then Zhu Kui offers two poems. How frightful were the talons and the teeth of the wild cat. Lifting it up, Nan Kuan clear-mindedly put it in the ditch. If he'd been able to get the monks of both halls to speak, would Nan Kuan still have brought his sword down or not? She also says, below the sharp sword, both were good at turning the body. There is nobody walking under the moon, along the old road. That which was blocked has been transmitted and flourishes. At the Golden Gates, secret armies halt by imperial decree. So one of the things we did in the class was everybody tried to compose their own poem for a koan. I encourage everybody who's listening to try this out. In your koan practice, not to take the poem like super seriously, like it's not meant to be crafted as like the best poem that ever existed or the best poem that you wrote. But if you take the time as you work with the koan and sit with it to write just for yourself a short poem, it's a record of that moment of encounter, that day that you're with that koan. And maybe you'll come back to that koan the next day or the next month or even a few years later. And if you have a chance and write another poem, you can see what's happened between you and that koan over time. And I've been doing a little bit of this myself. So I'll just end with my very momentary and temporary poem for this koan, Nang Kwan Kills the Cat. I hold up my own life. Tell me, should I cut or not? Is it good or is it bad? Am I living? Am I dead? You ask me what it is. I say, look. I lift the cup of water to my mouth and drink it down. We cannot be parted.